Hello, 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 and welcome back to Section 119 Sports. I'm Daniel Hansen here with two outrageously awesome men.
Trevor Porath.
And Jaden Johnson.
We're here back from Christmas break. We apologize there hasn't been a show for a while, but I mean, it's Christmas. It's family time, guys. But
how was it? And our recording studio was locked.
That's the main reason.
I suppose we could have done it from one of our couches, but...
That's the main reason, but we're going to play it off that we're very good family men and that we've devoted our Christmas to them, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I did.
I devoted it to college football because, I mean, their national championship,
fair.
Let's be honest, that was muchos gracias.
Fair.
But we got a special edition of Section 119 Sports, but every edition is special. But we're going to be delving into the Mountain West Conference for basketball for men's and women's a little bit here today. We're just barely starting into the season, so we're going to kind of go around, take shape of all the other teams, take shape of Utah State, of course, and where they stand at this point in season and how well prepared they are for the rest of the season. So let's just hop right into that, guys. Mountain West play, what's your takeaways right now for the conference?
It's kind of weird seeing... You know, San Diego State down at number 11 out of 11 teams. You know, that hasn't happened for a while now, I would believe. And then also UNLV, that's usually a top tier down there with them. The only ones that I suspected to be down there that are down there is Air Force, which Utah State actually lost to, and San Jose State is down there also.
You know, I actually watched a pretty fair amount of Mountain West basketball over the break. I don't know why, but they got a lot of TV time during Christmas break. And for as much of a disappointment as I guess this season has been so far, you know, it's definitely looking like a one-bid league, and some of the favorites aren't performing very well. It's been, like, there's some really fun teams to watch. Utah State being one of those, you know, given we're just 2-2, but it's a fun team to watch. There's some really fun teams. And on New Year's Eve, in between the bowl games or during halftime of one of the college football playoff games, I flipped over to Nevada and Fresno State, and that game was awesome. It went right down to the wire, a couple big three-pointers to tie it up or to win it. Fresno State came out on top of that one. Fresno State looks like a really good team.
Fresno State looks good. I mean, Nevada looks amazing. Like you're saying, it's
Nevada looks really good.
Nevada honestly could get in... an at-large bit.
They are the exception to that, I think.
They're 14-3 right now. I mean, if they do have a good conference record the rest of the way, like finish the season 26-5 or something like that, they'd have to still do well in the tournament, at least probably get to the championship. But, I mean, I could see them getting an at-large bid depending on the rest of the country. But
once Utah State wins that tournament and takes their spot, you know.
Well, that's a given.
But, I mean, with Nevada, I'm sure that you guys have seen at least highlights from what Nevada did to New Mexico the other day.
I feel bad for New Mexico.
If you haven't heard about this, it was a 25-point Nevada lead against New Mexico at the Pit in New Mexico. And that was in the second half, a 25-point lead. With just 2.5 minutes left, New Mexico led by 17 points, and with just over a minute left, they were up by 12 and lost in overtime.
New Mexico has had their heart ripped out so much already in this conference play. I mean, losing to us, I mean, granted, I mean, we're not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination, in my opinion at least. That was still a tough loss for them.
No question.
And then after that, to go back home, you're playing the best team in the conference from what we've seen so far in the season. You have them on the ropes. And then all of a sudden you just do not sink any free throws and you give up three after three after three to the same player on like a bunch of crazy like step backs, flailing three-pointers. And it goes overtime. You build another lead in overtime and you give that up and lose on that three-pointer. Like...
They do that to you at your place. That's I just as I so I told you guys the story, but I watched part of that game in the first half and then part of the second half, and it was, you know, a 20-25 point game, and so I shut it off. I thought I could be sleeping right now, and I'd rather be sleeping right now, so I did. And then the next day I saw something on Twitter about a miraculous comeback, and so I go back on under the Watch ESPN app and go rewatch the last few minutes of regulation, and I'm sitting there with 2.5 minutes left going, there's no way. 17-point game? Are you kidding me? That's not going to happen. And sure enough, they come back and win in overtime. And the entire time I was just thinking about how terrible would that be to be in attendance of that game cheering for New Mexico. I just can't even imagine.
Well, just think about it. I mean, we're all my appearances at the Spectrum have been kind of sporadic so far this season. But, I mean, you guys are also on the front row a lot. Like, can you even imagine what the Spectrum would be like if that was happening? Like, imagine USU fans after the game.
Well,
like,
and Nevada and New Mexico got booed off their own court. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
That can't happen.
I mean, like, Trevor, like, how would Derek, like, the big bald guy everybody sees at the games, like, how do you even think he's reacting if he's, like, seeing a 17-point lead just evaporate in 2 minutes?
I could see him as, you know, he's bald, so I can see you could actually see his veins on the top of his head popping out, and probably one just would just burst open and just start spewing blood all over. But
right onto the referees.
I think he'd somehow find a way to blame, like, that one. Who's that one? The one ref that we all
Vern.
He'd somehow find a way to blame Vern for it.
And Vern's not even reffing it, and he's still blaming Vern.
Like, it's somehow Vern's fault. We love you, Derek, but you're an easy target.
Just an unbelievable performance, though, where Nevada did everything, absolutely everything, perfectly. And New Mexico did everything practically as bad as they could, missing almost every free throw they took down the stretch, just, you know, leaving guys open that they shouldn't leave open. And, you know, Jordan Caroline, I can't wait to watch him play in the Spectrum. He went off for 45 points for Nevada. Fun game. And if nothing else, what you can say about the Mountain West is it has been fun to watch.
And there's a good segue, several good segues, to the Utah State team as well. Because, one, we're fun to watch. That's been well documented this season. But I think the past four games, we have been both New Mexico and Nevada. I think the first two games, like, we were New Mexico there. Like, we were bad.
Didn't beat Nevada.
No, I'm not saying we beat Nevada. I'm just saying that we...
Oh, okay.
Past four games, we were New Mexico and Nevada in, like, the final 2 minutes there.
I must have missed
there.
That one.
Yeah, sorry, that was a...
Nevada, Las Vegas. Yeah. That's what you meant.
There we go. Yeah. That was a poor segue, apparently, I guess. But let's face it. The first two games against Air Force and Boise State were not, I guess, terrific showings for this team. Like, Air Force especially, I think... That's, in my opinion, when you look at all the factors, that might be the worst loss of the season, even worse than Weber State.
Unquestionably for me.
Because Air Force is just... Weber State, to me, is a good program. They compete each year in the Big Sky, which, granted, it's not the ACC, but it's still decent. You got Montana in there. You got, of course, Weber State. Like, there's a couple decent teams, and it's an in-state rival. Air Force, I did not see a reason to lose that game. Like, that was just a tough... game to lose, especially coming out the way they did. 15-0 run at the start of it for Air Force. I mean, first two games there in conference play I think were really rough, but then it's just clicked, I think, the past two games.
To me, the most encouraging thing about this team is the thing that was the most discouraging about the football team. The football team, it was so rough because things would happen, negative things would happen. Coaching errors would happen, and then you would see no adjustment, no changes whatsoever. You wouldn't see any personnel changes, any starting lineup changes. Tim Duryea has shown that he's very willing to go out and make whatever changes are necessary to make this team win right away, even if that is taking out senior point guard Shane Rector and putting in a freshman. And I'm not trying to single out Shane here, but let's be honest. In that Air Force game, he was an enormous detriment to the team, especially in the last few minutes. he's had his moments, and he's, you know, he single-handedly won us that UVU game. I don't want to take anything away from him, but he went out and played very poorly against Air Force. And then the next game, sure enough, Coach Duryea had Sam Merrill in the starting lineup, and Sam Merrill went off on a tear. And that was a big part of the reason I think that we were able to beat New Mexico, a very good Mountain West team.
And another thing I can see going on with the basketball versus football ranks is the you could see that the football game, they'd start off like a big rock, and as the rock is going down the stream, it continues to get smaller. They started out great at the beginning of the game, and they just slowly got worse and worse and worse as the game went on. The basketball team, though, on the other hand, is they're starting like a little snowball on top of a hill, and they start rolling down that hill and continue to get bigger and bigger and better and better. And so if they could just start off a little bigger and start that game, you know, like they should, instead of, you know, missing all these, you know, three free throws in a row and missing all these stuff they shouldn't, if they could start a game great and continue that and get better like they have been throughout the game, these guys could be unstoppable.
Well, and we have enough snow in Logan that there's really no excuse to start out as a small snowball.
That is a fair point. I think that's just a experience problem. I mean, in rare cases like Kobe McEwen, consistency is just kind of there a lot of the time. Even for Kobe, his first half struggles are also there. I think those will probably correct themselves throughout this year and also the coming years for a lot of the players. That's also the thing that, again, I stress this to every time I'm in a debate, argument, or just a friendly discussion with somebody about the Utah State team. There's only four players, again, that had returning experience at any D1 level. And one of them is Julian Perry, who's been kind of a low rotation guy. And second one's Shane Rector, who just got benched for Sam Merrill. I mean, whether or not you believe that his performance has been bad or good, that was technically a benching. Mm-hmm. Then the third one is Quinn Taylor, who's kind of just been in flux at the four position with Barnaba and Darginton. So, I mean, this team's really, really young. What they're accomplishing right now is just amazing. Like, to be 8-7 at this point in the season, well, yeah, people have heard me talk the team up and wish that the record was more, just a couple weeks ago. That's still a pretty good showing for this team.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there, but also 15 games into the season, you shouldn't be starting that slow every game.
You shouldn't, but I'll kind of like make a comparison to my love affair with the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you've been around me for an NBA discussion, you know I absolutely love the Timberwolves right now. I think they're 5 years from now they'll be like.
You think that they're the number five seed?
We're not going to talk about that yet. I still think they got a shot at the playoffs though. But like they have had like the Timberwolves just real quick have had a lot of struggles with the third quarter this year. Like that's been like their downfall. Through at least like the first 20 games, they had like the best point differential of any team in the NBA in the first half. And then it's just the third quarter where they struggle. That's just an experience thing, and it still plagues them a lot right now. And I think I'm not comparing us to the Timberwolves in terms of potential, because, sorry, Jalen Moore, you're no Karl Anthony Towns.
He's better.
We'll let that slide right now. I think it's the same thing. Is the team's really young. It's still figuring out how to play at a D1 level, which is not as easy, I think, as some people like to think. Jumping up to a new level of basketball, whether it is D1 basketball or even the NBA. So I think the potential is there for what you're saying for them to be this dominant team. I just don't think it's really, I can't really think of how to word it. It's just not something I don't think that's going to really happen this year. But what I have seen from this year, the steps that they've made, the tinkering that Tim Duryea has done, makes me think that that is really close. Like, maybe not next year even, but the year after that, I think this team could be really special.
Well, and the thing is, everything, all of this said, you know, four returning players total, a rocky start, getting killed against Purdue, getting killed against Texas Tech, and you know, a couple of really disappointing losses to start the Mountain West play. put all that aside, Utah State is 2-2. They're fourth place in the Mountain West right now. The Mountain West is not great. Boise State's 4-0. Nevada and Colorado State are 3-1. And then there's Utah State. And that's against, you know, that's having played three pretty solid teams in the Mountain West. So the future, whether this team is going to step up and turn into what we're all hoping that they can right away, whether they can do that or not, as long as they are decent, I think that they still have a shot at this league.
And you look at the league, I think right now,
if they are a decent team, they can make some noise.
And you look at the team right now, I mean, regular season, while it does matter in college basketball, the conference tournament, especially for a Mountain West conference, which looks like one bid league, maybe two bid league, it's really just about the conference tournament.
Right.
And it's whether or not you're going to be hot or
it's
not.
3 days
at that
in
time.
March.
So, I mean, if we have a stretch where we're like, especially like against UNLV, where we're shooting almost perfect from the 3-point line in the second half, if we have like those kind of games, then we could do anything in the conference tournament.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't want my comments, I guess, before that, what you were saying, to kind of be misconstrued in that way. Like, this team still has a shot to accomplish a lot of things in the conference regular season and in the tournament as well. Like, there's a ton of potential here.
And they're only going to get better. And also with, you know, Tim Duryea being that guy and, you know, taking the steps to get a better team, even if it is just like a slightly better team or even kind of the same better team with putting Shane on the bench, at least these other guys are getting four of them. The starters will stay next year, barring any, you know, Coach K from, you know, poaching from us or anything. But, you know, so that should, you know, those guys will just build the chemistry for next year, and you just need to step one guy in there, and we should be able to do that quite easily with some of the big men we do have that.
And a lot of people might be kind of afraid of Jalen Moore leaving, but a recruit that I'm sure you two at least know, but Dwayne Brown, he's from, I think, a high school in Oklahoma.
He's playing at a junior college.
Junior
right
college?
Now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was my mistake. But he looks pretty good as well. He's been lighting it up as well. He looks like he'd be kind of slotting into kind of Jalen Moore's, at least that position, wing. I mean, of course, we're going to have a couple other guys that are already with the team.
We'll also have Clay Stahl that'll be able to step in there.
Clay Stahl as the center, like, I'm stoked to bring him onto the court.
And Darren Henson.
Henson,
that's a big-time guy, too.
And I'm really stoked about the way Darrington has improved this year. I think that's one of the biggest things Darrington is doing. One of my takeaways, I guess, from the season so far is how much individual guys have improved. Most notably, Alexis Darrington and Sam Merrill.
Absolutely.
Like, both of those guys just play with total heart. They don't. They play full.
And they're this super athletic. They just want to win. They put a lot of effort in everything they're doing. And it's just, I mean, you can get away with just doing effort, but now the game is really coming to them. They're really starting to understand a lot more defensively, offensively, and it's awesome just to watch that happening and unfurl before us.
Well, I said that the thing that encourages me the most is that Coach Duryea is willing to go out and make changes, and whether that's in-game adjustments or lineup changes or whatnot. The other thing, which is most encouraging to me, is seeing how much of a grip these younger guys have on the game already. Whether it's some of the, I don't want to say less athletic players, but, you know, obviously Kobe McEwen is an athletic freak. He's fast. He's strong.
Dude, his Euro steps in the lane.
Yeah, he's an athletic freak. But then you've got some of these guys like Sam Merrill, who's fresh off of a mission, had to lose a lot of weight. Alex Dargenton, who, you know, he's kind of a tall, skinny kind of guy. But these guys have a very high basketball IQ. With Kobe, it's, I mean, you can't not see it. The guy sees the court differently than anybody else. But Sam Merrill, I think, is very much the same way. He's a very intellectual player. He thinks a lot, and you could tell that he's always planning out exactly what he's going to do. He doesn't just run through the lane and chuck the ball up like one of our seniors does a lot. And I think it's the same with Alex Dargenton. A lot of these young guys, I think, just have incredible basketball IQs, and I don't know if that's a result of Tim Duryea specifically recruiting guys like that, or, you know, we just lucked out with these guys, but this team is in good hands for the future.
I think it's a little bit of both there. I mean, obviously Duryea is recruiting different players than Stu Mortal was. I mean, Kobe McEwen is exhibit A for that, I think. I can't recall any player in Utah State's history, say maybe Wayne Estes, that was on that level this early.
You know, and to go along with how they Darlington and Merrill have that high basketball IQ and they play differently, Merrill kind of reminds me of one other player that Daniel probably won't really like. Including his hairdo, I think plays a lot like Gordon Hayward. He just thinks about what he's doing, and his hair kind of looks like it too. So
I can see that a little bit. I kind of almost think he's more. He kind of invokes more of a Shane Battier kind of feel to me. Because, like, Shane Battier, like, if you're not familiar with NBA, I'm pretty sure he's retired now. But he was more of a three-point specialist, so he could do some off-the-dribble kind of stuff. And he was pretty good on defense, actually really good on defense. But he gave his heart, like, every single time he's on the court. And that's what Merrill does to me, is he's got a really good skill set. Like, he can shoot threes. He's one of our better three-point shooters. He has some good on-the-dribble moves. And he plays really good defense too, at least for a freshman. And he's giving his heart out. Like, that's, like, it's really hard to understate, like, how important that is, I guess, in my opinion, on this team, is just how much heart we see in this team. We didn't see heart with the football team. That was one of our biggest problems.
I think we could do a whole segment sometime of NBA comparisons to the guys on the Utah State team. It could get interesting. But going along with that, I went to the post-game press conference after the New Mexico game. And that was the first game that Sam Merrill had started. And there was a lot of Sam Merrill was at the podium. And there was a lot of questions directed towards Coach Duryea about the decision to start Sam Merrill. And I was really impressed by Coach Duryea's comments about Sam Merrill. He said, you know, this is a guy that got off his mission during the summer. He had to lose a lot of weight. He had to spend a lot of time with Coach Bishop, the strength and conditioning coach. He had to go to the weight room a lot and learn the plays. And, you know, already now, beginning of Mountain West play, he's our guy. He's the starting guard on this team as a freshman coming off of a mission. And he said that just really, really speaks to how hard of a worker Sam Merrill is and how much he's willing to go out there and how much of an unselfish guy he is. And then talking to Sam Merrill, you know, they asked about his first start, and he said, you know, I don't care, you know, it's not a big deal to me. I'll do whatever I can. You notice probably a few times on fast breaks during that game, he was not the one taking the shot. He was the one passing it. And, you know, just a very unselfish, very hardworking guy, and that's really impressive to me. I think that the backcourt is going to be like something we've never seen before at Utah State in 2 or 3 years if these two guys stay.
Again, they're only freshmen, and while they have displayed tremendous basketball IQ, they still make some freshman mistakes every now and then. I mean, there's still things like they sometimes charge in the lane, or they make a bad pass, or they don't make a pass. For some reason, they stall the offense. So, I mean, 2 years from now, when they're both like juniors, they'll be on their third year of experience at the D1 level playing these teams. I mean, that's a really good upside.
Another thing is how often you come home from a Mormon mission, you know, with less weight than you went.
He was overweight when he came back and had to cut back a bit.
Well, yeah, and I was like, how much you come back from a Mormon mission, not, you know, like if you go on a mission, you know, with its, you know, pretty good stature, how often do you come back not worse than you were before, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable that he's been able to step up this quickly, this fast. Same with Darlington, same with McEwen, every freshman that's really contributing on this team. I mean, there's a lot of roles on this team that were just handed to people, including one we haven't really touched on, but Kobe McEwen's really taken over, like, the closer role over the past couple of games as well. That's a tough role. Like, there's a lot of pressure put on you to perform in late game situations like that, and he's responded incredibly well to that. Like, we could spend hours talking about how well he's responded to that. So I mean, you look at just like the mental toughness that each one of those guys have to be able to respond to Duryea, putting that confidence in them and to come out and give good performances game in, game out. I mean, yes, we haven't done it for a full 40 minutes maybe in a lot of games, but heck, we're, again, 8-7. Like, you just got to give some props right there.
Yeah. I there's not much that hasn't already been said about Kobe McEwen's finishing ability. I don't have the numbers pulled up, but he's got to be averaging something like 18, 19 points a game in the second half over the last three or four games. In that, the most recent game, where he had 4 points in the first half and was it 24 in the second half?
It was something ridiculous like crazy. That. I mean, Boise crazy. State, he was scoreless in the first half, and he almost willed us to somehow pull that one out of our hats at the end there.
Just amazing. And I love it. You know, the kid's got ice in his veins. You can see he's always happy when he's out there playing. He's the leader of the team already as a freshman. I think that, to me, it feels like, okay, so this, like, it feels like this is still Jalen Moore's team, as I think it should be. Jalen Moore is one of the greatest Aggies to ever put on a uniform. I think he will go down as that. You know, maybe not top 3, 4, 5 or whatever, but one of the greatest. And I feel like this is still Jalen's team, and rightfully so. But at the same time, Kobe has kind of taken on a dual role, and it's very clear that this is Kobe's team down the road.
Yeah, I think that's one, that's a topic kind of, I don't think trouble, but just kind of curiosity over the stretch of the season, is when we get to like the conference tournament and it's a late game scenario, does Jalen Moore take like a final shot, or is it Kobe's? Because I mean, yeah, I think it should be Kobe's because he's proven that he's a little bit better. Like, let's be frank there. But at the same time, now it's Jalen senior season, last time in the conference tournament. Like,
yeah, the one thing that I do believe is that Tim Duryea isn't an emotional coach like that, in that sense that he's not going to give it to the guy that he thinks deserves, like the guy that he thinks would make a better story. I think he's going to give it to the guy that he has the most faith in at the time. And, you know, it's good to have a couple of guys that maybe one guy's covered and the other guy can pop open in the corner.
Not only that, I think from what I've seen, I think Jalen Moore would be okay with, you know, if he's told, you know, just do whatever the coach says. If the coach says for Kobe to take it, I think Jalen Moore would gladly step aside and let him take it. He just wants to be – he just wants to win.
That so is
he
may the kind be, of player that Jalen Moore is.
He could be the leader right now. Kobe can be taking over. So Kobe's kind of like the apprentice that kind of shows a little more each game. And Jalen Moore is knowing that he's leaving, so he's kind of stepping back each game and letting Kobe do more and more and more on that leadership
role. And I don't think that being the leader means that you have to have the last shot.
Yeah. Like,
I think that being the leader could mean that you're willing to step aside and give it to a guy that's got a better shot.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, the way Jalen's career at Utah State has gone, if there's a chance at success, he's going to do whatever it takes to get there anyways.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, to be honest, the past couple of seasons haven't gone how anybody's really want them to go. But I kind of also just want to touch on, I guess, the rest of the season. That kind of brings up that topic. We've mentioned Utah State's right there at, like, fourth place. They're positioned really well. I kind of want to kind of get a figure of, like, how well you guys think they're positioned. Because I'm looking at this team, I think a lot of our bad woes are kind of behind us. Like, I mean that in the sense that I think from here on out, Sam Merrill and Kobe McEwen are going to be one of the best backcourts in all the Mountain West, freshmen or not. And I also think the move to put Rector in the bench is really great because I think he will feast on opponents' reserves. Because those moves where he does kind of barrel into the lane, those get thwarted a lot better when it's a good starter that knows how to play defense, knows how to quell that. When he's up against lesser opponents, like in the UVU game, I think he does a lot better. So I think a lot of the tinkering that Tim Duryea has done so far this season, I think a lot of those have worked. And I think now it's just kind of starting to oil the machine. And I think from here on out, Utah State, again, I'm not saying they're going to be unbeatable, like as I alluded to earlier. But there's a really good chance that they could be in the talkings of the top couple spots in the Mountain West standings. Like, what do you guys think really about that?
You know, I've had this entire season, I feel like I've kind of gotten ahead of myself with hyping this team up. And really since the very beginning, I've thought that this is a team that could do some very special things in the Mountain West. And there's definitely been a little bit of a reality check lately. You know, starting out 2-2, a couple games that they probably should have won but didn't. I think that this is a team that is going to continually get better. They've got a lot of tough tests on the way. You know, they're going to have to play Nevada a couple of times. They're going to have to play San Diego State a couple of times, including this week, given San Diego State's a little bit down. But, you know, they've still got a lot of tests, and I think that at the end of Mountain West Conference, how many games are in a conference season off the top of your head? Do you know, 15, 16?
About 16 or so.
I see us coming out a bit above 500. Say if there's...
We have 14 left.
There's 14 left, and we're 2-2, so 18 total. I could very well see this team coming out, you know, 14, well, we'll say 12-6. And I think continually getting better, though. And those 3 days in March that determine the Mountain West's representative for the NCAA tournament, that could be when we're playing our best basketball of the year. And so I wouldn't put it past Utah State to be able to go in there and at least, you know, make it through a couple of rounds, maybe make it to the championship.
Yeah, and I also kind of want to preface that when I say that they could go to be one of the top seeds, it doesn't mean I think they will. I just think they have the capability to do that. To me, there's at least a difference there. But I completely agree. I mean, it's really all about getting better, especially for those 3 days in March.
Yep. That's what it's going to be all about. Looking at this week, Utah State is going to, first on Wednesday, going to play at Wyoming. Wyoming, I feel like they've somewhat overachieved this season. They really weren't expected to do much. I think they were picked one spot ahead of us in the preseason poll. So that's a team that like should be somewhat equal to us. But
I think they're one spot behind us, actually.
That could be.
They've also played one less game, so
they're 11-5 right now. They haven't really beaten anybody of note, but they came within 2 points of top 25 USC. They lost to Cal, they lost to Pacific, lost to UNLV and Fresno, with really no like big wins in there. Maybe Northern Iowa, I don't know, but you know, going to Laramie, I think that's going to be a real tough test for the team. And then on Saturday, they continue the road trip going to San Diego State, which I think that's probably the biggest storyline in the Mountain West so far, is how awful San Diego State has been. Well, I won't say awful, but underwhelming San Diego State has been. 0-3 in conference play, 8-7 overall, 0-5 on the road. It'll be interesting to see how Utah State performs in that scenario, and you know that San Diego State's going to be giving them their best shot, trying to get that. Maybe at that point, second conference win.
Sacramento State is playing, you know, they play San Jose State tonight. So, you know, I think I'd be more scared of San Diego State if they lose to San Jose tonight.
Because they would. If they lose to San Jose State, I wouldn't be afraid, because apparently they're really, really bad if they lose to San Jose State.
Is that game in San Diego?
Yes, it is. And I think, actually, this is a little bit further ahead in the schedule, but I think the game at New Mexico might tell us a little bit more about this team. Because it's one thing to beat New Mexico on our home court. It's another thing to go down there and still play a good game. Because you know New Mexico is going to come out at us firing, because they'll be pissed that they lost.
Well, as long as we just go on a shooting rampage at the end and we foul them a lot.
Apparently that's the key.
We'll be good.
But I think this next couple of games, I think, especially because, I mean, we didn't show we were capable of anything on the road against Air Force.
Nope.
So I think against Wyoming and San Diego State, two places that will be fairly difficult to play. I mean, I think this is the first, I guess, true big test for the Sam Merrill, Kobe McEwen backcourt. On the road, can that still hold up? Can they still score points when they need to? Can they defend when pretty much every player has a little bit of a boost from their home crowd? I mean, that's going to be a huge storyline, I think, there.
This team really hasn't proven much on the road yet.
No, I mean, they had
We had the win at UVU and the win at UC Irvine, both of which were good wins, but I don't know.
That's it.
You know, at the two Mountain West games that they've played on the road so far,
At the same time, you go also look through. Air Force was technically our first road loss of the season because technically all of our other ones were neutral courts. Neutral at Salt Lake against BYU. It's not really neutral, but that's what it's classified as.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
And so the Cancun games.
Yeah, the Cancun games especially. I mean...
Technically neutral, but...
But we don't have many fans that are willing to shell out to go to Cancun and apparently get a food poisoning from the hotel. So...
Yeah. But, I'm excited to see. What do you think out of this two-game road trip? You think we get one or two of them?
I think we can get one. I think we might be pressing it for two. This is a difficult one, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get two. Wouldn't be surprised if we get zero. I mean, that's kind of the team we are right now, but we'll see.
Agreed.
I'll take one win, and the other one, it'll either be a win or we'll lose by less than three.
I think they'll both be close, but if we get two wins, I'll be thrilled out of my mind.
Yeah. At this point, I think we have the same amount of chance to like win games as we do to blow them out or be blown out or lose on a buzzer beater. It's just, I mean, we've had quite a bit this year so far. So,
anyways, looking at other Utah State sports, there's not a ton going on right now. Gymnastics is just getting started. They've had one meet, and they've got another one this weekend, and we'll talk just a little bit about that. But the only other sport that's really ongoing is the women's basketball team, who made the front page of ESPN.com the other day. So shout out to them, except for the reason why. And I'm sure that probably if you're listening to this podcast, you're familiar enough with Aggie sports, and you've seen this on Twitter and all over the internet. But as Utah State men's team was taking on UNLV at home, the women's team was in Las Vegas taking on the UNLV women's team. And a pretty nasty little brawl broke out.
They got a mean right hook.
Yeah.
That's my analysis of it.
I actually got a text from another front rower who said there was a brawl at the women's game. And I'm like, what? Brawl at like a Mountain West Conference women's basketball game. Sure enough, it was pretty brutal. It was a good brawl. I wish it was at home so I could have seen it with my own two eyes.
Dude, I would have gotten involved, man. Just hop the barrier.
Seriously.
I never even knew those really happened in women's basketball. I've never seen a massive brawl like that.
I haven't either.
Like, even men's basketball doesn't happen that often. Like, you have
very
like,
rare.
Malice in the Palace or whatever.
Or if you involve New Mexico State in a basketball game, there will probably be one. But.
That too. Or the Denver Thuggets back in the day. But, I mean, brawls don't happen that often.
Especially
and Utah State never is in those brawls. But
it was awesome. I mean, like, obviously not like a good image to have for the university, but at the same time.
Well, that depends on if you say that we won the brawl or not.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I thought it was pretty evenly matched. Like, it was a good fight.
Well, they really saw really one hook on it, and then after that they kind of went away and then showed some other stuff that was still hilariously funny as they were.
Like, the main picture was, like, the, I can't remember the names right now of the two players involved, but... Like, you had that main picture of them starting to get tangled, and then everybody else just stormed in, and there was just, like, multiple storylines in there. It was just, like, super fun just to, like, watch those, like...
The hobbled girl hopping in from the bench.
Just
the Utah
little
State
gimp.
Player jumping in and then jumping out as quick as she could to get away from the brawl.
It's like, I support my teammate, but not enough to actually stay in this fight, so later.
Overall, it kind of turned out negatively for the Aggies. Four players from each team were ejected. Utah State was, I believe, ahead at the time that the brawl happened, but ended up losing in overtime.
And that's been kind of a downturn point, I guess, for the season, because now they're 1-3 for the conference play.
But let me ask you this. If you... Okay, who is one female out there that you would not want to get in a fight with? I mean, obviously, like, I hope you don't want to fight females, but like, who's one female
you don't want to see in a dark alley
to death?
Like, you know, I was actually thinking like I was gonna have a clever answer for that, like Scarlett Johansson, like as the Black Widow. But now that I think about it, pretty much any woman in MMA, like Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm, like all those, like, if they're pissed at you,
I was going to say Shevchenko from can't say it right, from UFC. She has her own weight. She's too big for all the other ones, so she doesn't really have a weight. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Man. Any Shevchenko, of those chicks could be in a wheelchair and still whoop me with their eyes closed. Like, it wouldn't even be a fight.
Like, you know that scene from Monty Python with, like, the Black Knight gets, like, the limbs chopped off?
Oh, yeah.
It could be them with all the limbs chopped off against me, and I'd still think they'd win.
Yeah. I can't. I guess I don't watch enough UFC. I have a hard time thinking of, like, a specific... Maybe I should have thought of one before I posed the question, but I guess I wouldn't want to get in a fight with Princess Fiona. She's pretty vicious.
It depends on which version of Fiona it is. One of those versions I wouldn't mind too much.
No, like the ogre version. Okay, never mind. People with bow and arrow.
Never mind. We're done with that then.
Yeah. Oh, maybe like some of the elf chicks from Lord of the Rings. They're kind of vicious.
Yeah. I still think Black Widow or Scarlet Witch or whatever, I think.
Yeah. From
Avengers, like either one of those. I mean, they're not only good at fighting, but they're also just crazy. So,
regardless, Utah State women's basketball team is 1-3 in Mountain West play, which I couldn't think of a good transition, so I just jumped right back in there. it's not great. You know, they had a really good preseason, and then right now they've lost 4 out of their last 5. Given the UNLV game, that was on the road, went to overtime. Tough loss there. But they're back home this week playing Wyoming and San Diego State. Good chance to bounce back a little bit. You know, if they win those, they're back up to 3-3. Yeah, could happen.
Yeah, and Wyoming, San Diego State, I think they're just kind of also middle of the pack for the Mountain West, at least in terms of the preseason polls. So, I mean, at home.
They'll have the power of the 10 students.
Yeah, they'll have the power of Derek, pretty much, and Kevin Floyd singing Titanic songs during free throws. So, I mean, you can't deny the impact that has on the game.
Spectrum magic. Hashtag spectrum magic.
Make the spectrum magic again.
Yep. But. So a couple games for them. They got Wednesday night at 7 o'clock against Wyoming and then Saturday at 2 p.m. against San Diego State, both at the Spectrum. Other than that, on the Aggie calendar, there's not a ton. We talked about men's on the road twice this week. Wednesday and Saturday, same days, women's are at home. But the women's gymnastics team just got started. I guess there's not like a women's and a men's, so it's just the gymnastics team, because there's not men's gymnastics at Utah State. But the gymnastics team, they just barely got started at a tournament in Arizona. They took second, didn't do great, but they're back home on Friday night, 7 o'clock p.m. against North Carolina State and Bowling Green.
I don't know anything about gymnastics, but anytime we're playing a team from Kentucky and Power North Carolina, five. I mean, they've got to be great, right? Trevor, you know stuff about gymnastics. Is Bowling Green a powerhouse gymnastics team?
I know about gymnastics. I don't really know about other teams in the NCAA. I could tell you which if it's a point, you know, 3/10 deduction or a 1/10 deduction on the step, but I couldn't tell you the power rankings unless it's like Utah or Texas or Georgia, pretty much.
But, you know, those meets are awesome. They actually get a lot of people out to them for some of those, and I'm sure where this is the first one, there will be a pretty good crowd there. 7 o'clock p.m. at the Spectrum Friday night. So if you're able to, might as well get out of the cold. Actually, by then, I don't know, with the weather in Cache Valley, by then it might be 75 degrees and sunny. We'll see. But regardless, it's always good to get to the Spectrum.
And gymnastics, honestly, one of the funner sports to watch.
Oh, I love it.
That people don't.
It really
that
is
are
fun.
Kind of out of the mainstream, I guess. It's a hipster sport. Let's put it that way.
Here's what I don't get. Everyone, like, during the Olympics, everyone's favorite sports are, like, volleyball and gymnastics, right? That's what everybody loves to watch during the Olympics. Maybe add in there, like,
kayaking.
Some of the skiing and stuff. But, like, you've got a chance to get out and support the Aggies while watching those awesome sports at like a super cheap price too. I don't know the prices, but it's cheap. So take advantage of that.
And yeah. Speaking of gymnastics, Madison Ward was the conference floor specialist of the week.
Shout out to Madison.
Snap.
They have a weird conference. It's called like the Mountains.
The Pacific Rim.
Mountain States.
That was a terrible movie. Oh, the, why were they the in the conference after that?
Not the Pacific Rim. The Mountain Rim?
Mountain conference. Rim Gymnastics Conference.
I'm sticking with Pacific Rim.
Still a terrible movie. Also, just briefly on the other rest of the Aggie calendar, teams that don't play at home too often, but track is at an invitational up at Montana State for the next couple of days. Then men's tennis is at Gonzaga and also Washington over the next couple of days, which, and Oregon. Wow. Like, Power 5 stuff, man.
That's next weekend, Daniel.
Oh, it is? Oh, I thought they
were... You're close. Track is in Nampa, Idaho, and tennis is at UC Irvine and San Diego. Either way, they're not at home, though, so I can't fault you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dangers of looking up the calendar on your phone, is you're sometimes stupid with your phone. But anyways, it's glad to be back.
It is Aggie good to Sports. Be back.
Not back for this semester, I guess, but back speaking with you
forever
on Aggie Sports. Anything to peace out with the listeners for?
Go Clemson, I guess. I'm glad they won. Go Jazz. They're playing the Cavaliers tonight. Go Jazz. I'll say that.
That's a little more ecstatic. We can end on that. Later, folks.